Hello and welcome to the Swiss Connection. I'm Susan Masika. Think of interpreters, and you might think of faces wearing headphones in glass booths at conferences, or perhaps people whispering into the ears of presidents at international summits. But have you ever thought about the skills these unsung heroes have to master and the pressures they have to face? In this podcast, SwissInfo journalist Thomas Stevens speaks to one of the Swiss Parliament's 9 official interpreters about the challenges of ensuring that everyone can understand what's going on in a country with 3 official languages.
Translating the news at home, at least for a couple of minutes, and then my girlfriend comes in and talks to me and I realize, okay, I probably shouldn't be doing that.
Ah, the occupational hazards of being a professional interpreter. If you or I ever need to interpret between 2 people, we'll probably end up doing some consecutive interpreting. Frau Schmidt, for example, will say a sentence in German and then wait while you tell Mr. Smith what she has just said, and so on. This works fine, but it's slow. Simultaneous interpreting, on the other hand, considerably increases the efficiency, but also the stress and mental challenge. Listening and speaking at the same time is not a natural human act. Hans-Martin Juriman has mastered this skill, however, and has been interpreting in the Swiss Parliament for 14 years. I visited him in his booth, with its prime view over the House of Representatives debating chamber, during the autumn parliamentary session. I started off by asking him, outside his booth, how he felt the first time he put the headphones on in Bern.
I was absolutely nervous the first time I did it. I was overwhelmed with all the, not so much basically the speeches that were delivered, but more the context and all the specific, jargon that they use, you know. At first that frightened me a bit, and it took me quite a while to get through that jungle of terms. And then once you've done that, you can actually focus on what's being said, what's being delivered by whom, and you start understanding. Once you understand the way it works, it's a lot easier. You get that out of the way, you can really focus on what's being said by members of parliament.
So how does it work? Switzerland has 3 official languages, German, French and Italian. There are therefore 3 interpreting booths, one interpreting into German, one into French and one into Italian. Juriman is in the German booth. Because simultaneous interpreting is one of the most exhausting things the brain can do, each booth is home to 3 interpreters who take it in turns to work shifts of between 30 and 45 minutes. Whereas I would probably go and lie down in a dark room between shifts, Juriman says a quick coffee and a bit of sunshine is usually enough, and often interpreters prefer to stay in the booth. After all, an interpreter spends almost as much time preparing as actually translating.
Yes, that's probably one of the things that makes it so challenging. When we leave in the evenings, we're all pretty much tired. And any conference that you work for, it's usually monothematical. You get one topic. It's about, it's a dentist's congress or something like that. And it might take some time to prepare, but what we get here is a mixed bag. You go from A to B to C, and obviously you do have your agenda, but then usually you won't be able to prepare every single item on that agenda. It would just take you days to do that, read all the background documents. So actually learning how to prepare for sessions, parliamentary sessions, is essential.
Juriman, like his 8 colleagues, is a freelancer who has a contract for the 8 or so weeks that parliament sits a year. He grew up in trilingual Canton Graubünden, and in addition to German, French, Italian and English, he speaks Spanish and can understand Romansh, Switzerland's 4th national language. He clearly has a gift for languages, but how difficult is listening and talking really?
Have you ever sat in a train and there was someone having a conversation next to you and you were having a conversation, you picked up some of what was being said? That's how it starts somehow. Like you sort of realise that you're quite good at that, you can eavesdrop, you can talk, have this conversation at the same time, follow what's going on there. And then it's also sort of, I think it's mechanical to some point, you can train it a bit. And that's how you start at interpreting school. First, you start with an exercise that's called shadowing. So you listen to a text and you repeat what is being said in the same language with a bit of a delay. And then, you take it from there.
You go home and practice. So you're watching the news and you try to simultaneously interpret the news at the same time.
Yes, I did lots of that. News, before the internet, it was a real challenge. You could really get to any sources of audio. You know, there were no audio archives and stuff. But then YouTube came, and that's really made things a lot easier, preparation a lot easier. Before that, we had to work with tapes from the 80s, from some kind of meeting at the UN. And it wasn't related to the present, really. So it made it really difficult. But nowadays, preparation's a lot easier.
I often hear that the hardest part of interpreting is jokes, you know, because a lot of puns and wordplay are basically untranslatable. Whenever someone stands up and says, right, I'm going to tell you a joke now, does your heart sink? Have you got an emergency supply of gags up your sleeve that you... How does it...
It would be useful to have an emergency supply. No, absolutely. That's probably the toughest. Or translating menus, you know, someone... A conference in the Bernese Oberland and someone... sort of standing up, by the way, the menu tonight is, and then there's all these local specialties, and you have no idea how to translate those. But yeah, jokes are absolutely usually impossible to translate. You have to paraphrase, but you know, obviously they lose their, you know, there's no fun anymore.
Do you have any examples of amusing mistakes either you have made or anonymous colleagues have made?
I do, but I'm not sure where I want to share them with you.
At the end of the day, after a parliamentary session, I mean, how do you feel? Do you ever you go to a restaurant and you just find yourself interpreting the waiter or something like that?
That can happen, yes. That can absolutely happen. Here in Bern, it very much depends on whether it was a very French debate or an Italian debate or a German debate. After, you know, some afternoons, we just basically, we're present, but you don't have to work much. And then you really have to struggle not to sort of lose track of what's being said. But on a day that's actually very French or Italian, sometimes you find yourself leaving the Bundeshaus and sort of also going through things you said. And wasn't there a better way to say that? And yes, absolutely, as you said, also listening to other people and sort of translating it or translating the news at home at least for a couple of minutes. And then my girlfriend comes in, talks to me, and I realize, okay, I probably shouldn't be doing that.
Do you find that there are some politicians who are easier to interpret than others? I mean, everyone has some different rhetorical styles. I imagine that the better you know a person's attitude and sense of humour and so on, the easier it is to interpret them.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There are huge differences between various politicians. That's why it's hugely helpful, as you saw before, to have actually visual contact. So being sort of in a booth without a screen or anything, you would still be able to interpret what's being said. But here you get lots of gestures. You get, you know, there's hecklers down there and stuff. You can see who's getting ready to ask a question, and you know the dynamics of that. And there are certain speakers, let me put it this way, the most difficult is always when someone comes up with a written speech and did not send it to us. So we try to prompt them and tell them, please send us your documents. It's not so much about speed, but when speed comes together with the written text, it's very challenging.
You said the hecklers. Do you have to translate the heckles as well? That must be a challenge.
Well, usually we can't hear because the microphone's just on the rostrum, so we don't. But yes, when we hear what's going on, we translate that as well. Yeah.
What does one need to be a good interpreter? You obviously need excellent language skills, but I get the impression that knowing the language isn't enough. You need good cultural awareness, cultural references, even personal dynamics. You know, what's the speaker's character? You're working not just with words, but with ideas, with emotions. Are there any characteristics or qualities or skills that the best interpreters have in common?
I would say that probably a general feat would be that you have to be curious. You have to be, you know, there's topics being dealt in there that probably wouldn't interest the majority of the population. Personally, I like foreign politics. I like what's going on between Switzerland and the EU. And stuff like that. Natural, environment's always a challenge because, you know, often it's about the protection of a specific species and you have to learn lists of insects and stuff like that. That's interesting, but because you know that your performance depends on your preparation, you sort of have to force yourself to be interested in all those topics.
Do you ever interpret between two people when a politician or a cabinet minister goes somewhere and, you know, there's somebody in the background whispering in ears? Do you ever do spontaneous interpreting between two people?
Yes, I've done that with members of government, also with speakers of the House, Nationalratspräsidenten, when they met with, for example, I remember this meeting between the Nationalratspräsident and the head of the Palestinian Authority.
How does that compare with what you're doing here?
Well, number one, it's usually English, and between English and German. Two, you're immensely more nervous, Number three, the content, like, it's basically not, it's not as challenging as what we do here. But here it's all about the technicalities of laws, about, you know, getting your glossary right, having your vocabulary and everything. And there it's just about mostly courtesy visits. So it's, what's being said is not so important, but it's more about the presentation. Whereas here in the booth, content is essential.
There are 200 politicians in the House of Representatives. The 46-seat Senate doesn't have interpreting. How many politicians actually use the headphones? Is there an element of pride in, if you feel seen to be using headphones, is that sort of is that a sign of weakness?
I could only speculate on that. But as you probably noticed, the sheer amount of people sitting down there during a normal debate is not so impressive. So there might be, there's maybe a third of the councillors sitting there right now. And every now and then, you know, someone grabs the headphones. I can see there's people using them, like, systematically. But there might be an element of pride in there, yes, I guess. And it's also, the other element is that in the plenary, there's usually not, you know, there's no breaking news. It's not, votes have been decided and the debates happened in the commissions and everything. So that also plays a role. So,
have you noticed any change in politicians' linguistic skills over the years?
That's a tricky one. Well, I tend to believe that younger politicians are probably more e-speaking English rather than French. There's some systematic users of our services, but I can't really see all of them, so it'd be difficult to make an assumption in that way. But assuming that sort of in society in general, there has been a shift, a generational shift concerning language skills as well, it'd be fair to assume that that also reflects in Parliament.
In Switzerland, you do occasionally hear two Swiss from different linguistic regions speaking English. I've noted at Swiss Info, I see that as well, between Swiss colleagues speaking English, usually younger ones. Is English ever spoken in the corridors of power in Bern?
I've never heard that, actually, no.
So there's no, I mean, it's probably politically taboo, but there's no, never talk of making English a sort of lingua franca in Parliament.
No, wait another 20 years.
Computer technology is advancing rapidly. Computers can already translate texts impressively, and voice technology is also, you know, a lot better than it was even just 2 years ago. Are you worried for the future? Can you see? I mean, a computer could, in theory, do the job, couldn't it?
Well, to some extent, yes. You know, most interpreters follow what's going on, and then you think, well, it'll still be another 20 years before that happens, and it might be that way. But honestly, I'm not sure whether what would be first, English as lingua franca, which would mean that we're superfluous anyway, or computer technology sort of advancing to the point that it could replace us. It is extremely sophisticated, and I guess, you know, feeding those computers will take years. Essentially, it's a question of time. I agree with you.
That was Hans Martin Joriemann, an interpreter in the Swiss Parliament, speaking to Thomas Stevens. Visit us at swissinfo.ch for more stories about multilingualism in multicultural Switzerland. The Swiss Connection is a podcast where we talk to newsmakers based in Switzerland as well as Swiss people living abroad. We produce a new episode every few weeks. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or another platform to be sure you don't miss the next one. Thanks for listening, and thank you to studio technician Donnie Wheeler. Signing off for all of us here, I'm Susan Masika.
Hi, my name is Fabio Canich. I'm the host of another Swiss Info podcast, The Geldcast. I'm a journalist and lecturer on international monetary policies. In my podcast, I talk to finance experts, politicians, and people in the banking industries on money-related topics. This podcast is from the land of money, Switzerland. It is published bi-weekly on YouTube. Highly valuable content, but free to listen to.